I feel like this is the start of like laid off anonymous. Like, my name is Mary and I've been laid off.
Thank you, Mary. Hi, Mary. Welcome back to Meet Me by the Dumpster, a podcast about the messy middle of work and beyond by two colleagues turned friends. I'm Astrid.
I'm Mary. Excited to be back recording again. We've taken a little bit of a hiatus, but you know, life happens. So today we're going to be talking about layoffs, a topic that we're unfortunately very intimately familiar with. And chances are, if you are alive right now and you work maybe in tech, you're also probably familiar with this. This is 2024, and the last couple years have been really rocky for, I think, employment across the board. Not just tech, though, media, entertainment, everything. So I also think we've both given ourselves enough space since this has happened. So we're ready to kind of dive into this and discuss our experiences. And yeah.
We're coming to you from the other side. No, it's so true though. Of my friends in New York who work in tech, I want to say 60 to 70% have been laid off in the last year. So if you're listening to this and that's been you, or you think it might be you, you are very much not alone. So yeah, we're going to be talking about our experiences being laid off, how to support a friend or colleague who's been laid off, and how each of us responded after the experience. And so Mary, why don't you kick us off? We'll start light and fluffy as we love to do, and just let's dive in. Yeah, tell us about being laid off.
All right, here we go. Yes, I have been. I feel like this is the start of like laid off anonymous. Like, my name is Mary and I've been laid off.
Thank you, Mary. Hi, Mary.
Yeah, for sure. So it's been, in terms of time, it's been probably a year and a half since I got laid off. So I definitely have quite a lot of emotional distance from it. But at the time, I was working in a director level role. So I was, you know, at the highest point in my career at that time. And I was working at a really small startup that had just been like struggling financially. And they had actually already done two rounds of layoffs at that point, including someone that I managed on my own team. So I had to lay someone off. And I think that I had kind of an unusual situation. I mean, maybe you all have heard horror stories. Astrid will share her story today, certainly. But I had an unusual situation where I found out my boss actually reached out to me like on a Sunday randomly, and I happened to be out of town. I was actually in Tennessee visiting friends. It was like it's an annual friend trip that we do. And then she's like, hey, let's talk. And I'm like, oh boy, why are you contacting me on a Sunday? And yeah, I think, you know, she called me and let me know. She really wanted me to like know it was coming so that I could like kind of have enough notice. So I didn't have sort of that moment where like, you know, you get something placed on your calendar and you're like, oh shit, what's about to happen to me? So I was fortunate in that situation. She wanted to kind of like let me know. So when I found out I was getting laid off, I did have about like 6 weeks of work left. She was like, this is when it's coming. And so I think in some ways, like I really appreciated that because I had a heads up. And also I had, you know what I mean? Knowing that information I had, in a sense, you could think of that as like extra income or almost extra severance, because the severance package that they gave me was so dismal. So I think they sort of like were baking into this like, oh, Mary got an extra 6 weeks of heads up. But I think in some ways it was like hard too, because there wasn't that moment where the Band-Aid was ripped off and you're like, okay, I'm laid off now. I'm starting over. What's happening next in my life? But I was in a super weird limbo for like the remaining time at the company. And, you know, I ended up training my replacement, which was so hilarious because at the time they were like the head of HR and I was the director of community. And so like they were taking over my role with absolutely no experience.
And I was like HR community. Same thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was just like the company was in such a dire state financially that they like just didn't care. And so I was like 1 foot in, 1 foot out. And, you know, I think it was tough. Again, I was appreciative of the time and the advance notice, but it was also tough because if anyone who's looking for a job right now has been looking for one, you know how much time and mental energy it takes to find a job. And so I was still working there while trying to figure out what I was doing. And so I think it was like difficult in that sense. But, you know, I think it's so funny because getting let go is like, in some ways, it's like very confronting because you're like, okay, what am I going to do? I need to get another job. I need to make money to survive. But I also think it's a reminder that like, don't hold on to anything too tightly, because you become basically irrelevant and replaceable, like in an instant. Like the company's like, you're done. We don't care. Like and so I think it is a good perspective to keep in mind of like, when you are working somewhere, like don't sacrifice too much of yourself, because in an instant, your company can decide, like, doesn't matter like what impact you made or like how much time you put in or how much you sacrificed. Like when you're laid off, you're just laid off. So yeah, I'm curious, Astrid, I know you and I had very different experiences, so I would love to hear yours.
Yeah. Well, as I was getting ready, I was thinking, you know, we know each other so well at this point where, not to say I don't have any new stories for you, but you know, at some point in the friendship, it's like you've heard a lot of the things that have happened. But I don't know if you've heard my first layoff story that happened when I was in China.
Oh, I actually don't know if I knew you got laid off in China. So, okay.
Yeah.
So she's trying to one-up me. She's like, Mary, I have two layoff stories and you have one. Okay. Like, okay, fine.
You've got nothing on me. So, okay, good. I'm sort of excited then. This is a new story for you. So, yes, I was living in China. This was my early 20s. And I had a job at a quote-unquote education consultancy. And I was working part-time and also studying Chinese, and the company was not doing well. And one of my friends from college was looking for jobs in Shanghai, and she asked if I could introduce her. And so I introduced her to the company. She ends up getting hired. She's developing curriculum. And one day, so the company had so few students at this point that there weren't students to teach. And so instead of teaching students, the employees went through the course. It's as if when you were a teacher, there weren't students. They had all the teachers like sit in on a class, which should have been assigned to me. Like, this is not going well.
The writing's on the wall.
And so myself and the six employees or so are sitting in this class. And then it ends and it's 6 o'clock. So I'm getting ready to leave. And my boss is like, oh, Astrid, I need to talk to you. And I'm not thinking too much of it. So I go into this small room and he's like, you know, as you know, we've just been having difficulty getting students. So unfortunately, we're going to have to, I don't know if he said the words, let you go. He was very like, went to Harvard for his MBA. You know, you can probably sort of.
Was he American or was he Chinese?
He was American.
Okay.
And I was really blindsided. I was also really young. I think I was 22, 23 at this point, living in a foreign country. And I just immediately start to cry. And I see him fumbling with his phone. He'd been recording the conversation. I think he was an interesting guy. And I think he was doing it to protect himself, as to like, he wanted to have a record of the conversation. But then when I started to cry, I think he realized, like, oh, I'm not going to necessarily want to have had this conversation recording of me making this 22-year-old woman cry. So he's fumbling with his phone and it gets better. I was going to have to train this friend who I'd helped get hired to
okay.
do my job.
Wow. God.
Yeah.
Another example. That's such bullshit.
It was.
How do you it's like you're laid off, but now also train your replacement.
And train your replacement who you helped get hired and
who'd been there less time than you.
Who'd been there less time. There were a lot of layers. And
yeah.
I was very tempted. I really wanted to just leave it behind. I'm sure, as you were saying, you know, it's hard. You know you're being let go and to still stay on. But A, I needed the money. Mostly it was really I needed the money. And I was fortunate. So my partner at the time was a little older and pretty savvy. And so he helped me put together this really well-worded email that I sent to the founder. It was like, you know, it was a difficult decision to hear, but I really believe in the future of the business and I'm happy to stay on, like help train. And
you guys can't see my eye roll right now.
And I think he made this guy feel even worse. So it was sort of funny as he ended up introducing me to his business school friend who had a company that was literally next door. And so I started working for that company.
Oh, okay. All right. So this calculated email ended up working out for you.
It did end up working out. And it gets better though. The education company continued to do poorly. And so the two other people I worked with also ended up working for this new company. And I had to train them to work at this new company.
Wow, this sounds like very incestuous, like just this whole situation.
It really was a little, I mean, that's one of those things, A, working in China, I mean, maybe that's another episode topic, is just such a different ball game. And I was so young that, and I didn't love either of these jobs, and I didn't love the second job, but it was money in my pocket. I could do it while I was studying Chinese. And the experience did teach me a lot. I don't think until then it just hadn't really occurred to me that I might get laid off, even though, again, there were no students. What did I think was going to happen? Like, the employees were taking the class. How long could that go on?
Right.
And it was definitely a humbling experience. So that was my, have we never told you that story?
I haven't. I didn't know that story. And honestly, I mean, it's so funny. I feel like you know, in some ways that's good. You learned that lesson so early on. I think for me, when I was in my 20s, I was very naive and, you know, had this mentality of like, oh, well, I work so hard, I would never get laid off. When in actuality, that's not the reason that people get laid off.
It can come for you at any time.
Yeah, if it hasn't come for you, it might be coming for you very soon.
We're just trying to make everyone feel good. Anyways, and then more recently, I was laid off in a much more typical fashion. I'd been working at this company for about 2 years, and we'd been acquired right around the time I started. And there were some signs that in hindsight, probably I should have been a little more attuned to. I do think when you're working remotely, it can be harder to pick up on things that if you're in a in-person situation, you might notice more meetings happening or just a general energy. And so I was moved to a new team, but things were going pretty well. My new manager and I were getting along. I liked the new team. And so I thought, okay, you know, new team, whatever. And 1 week, my manager moved our one-on-one to a different day. And you know me well enough where usually this would set off alarm bells. And it didn't actually. I was like, you know what? Things happen. People have doctor's appointments. This doesn't necessarily mean anything. Well,
this time it did.
This time it did. So it was a very typical situation. I joined the Zoom call and almost immediately I see not just my manager, but the director of HR. And in an instant, I knew, you know, there is no reason that you're in a meeting with HR that no one's told you about with just you and your manager. Like, they're not, you know, telling you you're being promoted. And from there, the conversation, the director of HR clearly had this script. It was like, you're being made redundant. We appreciate your time with the company. You're going to get severance of, I think it was 10 weeks. We'll follow up with an email. And I really didn't say much. I was a little numb and just trying to take it all in. I think I also felt embarrassed, which I shouldn't have, but I definitely, in that moment, I think I felt shame and just wanted the call to end. And I also figured, what was I going to say? You know, no, please. Like, so I think I just said something to my manager, like, oh, you know, I've enjoyed working with you and, you know, I'm sorry to hear this, but, you know, I'll be on the lookout for the email. And I get off the call and I didn't cry. I just felt very numb. And I don't think it even hit me right away until I was like, oh, okay. And then my mind started going to, what do I need to do? All of this. And that was pretty, yeah. So it was very unceremonious. A Zoom call, director of HR, probably a 4-minute conversation, which, you know, to your point about the Band-Aid, it was swift. And within half an hour, you know, my Slack access was turned off, email access. And it's jarring. All these things you're working on, it's like they just disappear. And I do think it's a good reminder of, you know, an hour earlier, I'd been putting together metrics and drafting all these notes. You know what probably happened to those? Like, they're probably in, you know, just some corporate graveyard somewhere. And it's a difficult realization, but I think a good realization to have. And if you go too far right then, it's like, oh, nothing matters. Anything could change. And so I don't think you can go too far in that, but shit happens.
Yeah, it's amazing how just so quickly, yeah, everything you've done, everything you've worked on doesn't really matter. So again, I do think you have to be balanced with it too. Like, you don't want to become so disconnected and not care about what you're doing, because this is how you're spending like the majority of your time in your life, is on your job. So you do want to like give a shit, but also, yeah, It's a good reminder. Yeah, I think your story is probably more similar, I imagine, to a lot of the experiences of like the friends that we've had that have been laid off, or the people in our networks that have been laid off, right? It's just sort of like, oh, this calendar hole pops up and you're like, oh, wait. Mm-hmm. And then it just happens. So yeah, I mean, again, I feel fortunate because I do feel like in some ways I had a soft landing. But then, you know, you're in this awkward position where you are training your replacement and you're just like, I just want to move on with my life. Like, you guys are moving on. You don't want me anymore. Let's just end this thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's something about that slow burn that, yeah, there's obviously benefits and money is important and the major one, but there is something nice about it being over.
Right.
What were the first few weeks and months like for you? Did you start looking for jobs immediately?
I think that, yeah, I think most people, right? My immediate response was like, I must find a new job. So I was like hitting LinkedIn so hard. I think, you know, and I did have a little bit of advance notice, right? So I felt like I must take action. So it was like, I would wake up and look at jobs every day. I would be scrolling on my phone. I would be firing off resumes. You know, we're repurposing old cover letters. And so yeah, I think I felt like I had to do something like, oh, this is a problem that I have and I need to solve it. And, you know, I just remember like rewriting all these stupid blurbs to that question of like, why do you want to work here? And it's like, cause I want to make money. Like,
need to survive.
Yeah. Which I'm like, for all the people, like all companies out there, like stop asking that fucking question, because it's like, why do you think I want to work here?
But I'm just really excited by the possibility of your enterprise software and the ability it has to really impact corporations everywhere.
So annoying. Okay. But I will say that I also did have kind of a unique situation that I had started freelancing a few months before. So I had a really kind of, you know, serendipitous situation happen where a few months before I had someone that a connection that I had reached out to me cold and was like, we'd worked together years before. And he was like, do you want to come and work for my company as like part-time? And I was like, oh. And, you know, again, this is sort of like reading the signs, right? I'd already seen two layoffs at my company. And at that time, I had no idea that I was going to be laid off. But I was like, oh, okay, well, maybe this is a good idea. I can like make a little extra money. And that ended up being like the best decision I'd made, because so I wasn't like, you know, completely income-less, right? I had this side job. And so, but I still really was like, I need a full-time job. I need benefits. But it just became like more and more clear every single day, like how tough the job market was. And so I got to a point where I just like stopped applying, because I, you know, I would get referrals to companies and I would hear nothing. You know, they'd be like, we're putting your resume in front of the recruiters and still nothing. And then, you know, you're looking at jobs and 800 people have applied to the same job. So I think it really forced me to just take a step back and kind of like honestly reimagine what my career looked like. And I think I feel very fortunate that having that one freelance job helped me see like, okay, wait, maybe I could do something differently. And so that kind of put me on a different path. But yeah, well, I'm curious, what was it like for you? Because I know in your situation, you know, you didn't necessarily have that side job.
You use the word serendipitous. And I think, yes, there is some serendipity to it. But also you had to do hard work that put yourself in that position. And it reminds me of the earlier point we were talking about where neither of us wants to go down this place of, oh, this work doesn't matter. It could all change in a second, because you got this freelance job because you'd worked with this person and they'd been impressed by you. And so I think it's a good reminder that, yes, we work for our companies and things like that, but you also have this benefit. And now you have this freelance job that you helped, you know, we'll get into this, but you helped me get a job with this person as well, because of the hard work you put in that has nothing to do with that company. And so I think that is a good reminder of, yes, there was some serendipity, but it was also, yeah, you'd done hard work throughout your career that helped put you in a good position. And so I just want to mention that it wasn't just like this fell from the sky and, oh, how lucky were you?
I appreciate you saying that. I mean, I do think like I have tried to keep, you know, I think we've talked about this on the podcast before, but like careers are very long, you have no idea like where you could end up later, who you might be working with again, who might be in a position as of power to, like, you know, make decisions or support you. So totally. Yeah. I always, you know, tried not to burn any bridges throughout my career.
Yeah. I think not only did you not burn bridges, but I think you're very good at building bridges.
Thank you.
Mary Finley, bridge builder.
Again, we use this podcast just to hype each other up.
Why we're both amazing to work with. Anyway, so I, in the immediate aftermath, literally the day of, I'd been at a WeWork, which was funny because I don't go to WeWorks very often. And I don't even know why I went to a WeWork that day, but I did. And so, you know, once I was laid off and didn't have any more work to do, I was like, well, I guess I'll go home. And I went home and my partner at the time had gotten me a salad and flowers with a note that said, this is nothing more than a push in the direction you're meant to go. And that was a really nice sentiment and made me feel a little bit better. And then the next thing I did is we'd been texting about something else and I hadn't told anyone except for my partner yet. And I was like, oh, I should tell Mary because it's going to be weird if we're texting about this sort of random thing. And then later I'm like, oh, by the way, like I was laid off. And so I had to return something to Zara. And I think, you know, you're laid off and all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, money. So I was like, okay, I have to make this return to Zara. This $80 is going to go back in my bank account. And so I was walking to Zara. I think I was telling you what had happened, returned the dress. And then the rest of the day, I definitely didn't apply to jobs or anything. I think I just let it sink in. And then pretty much the next morning, I did start applying to not your sort of typical 9-to-5 jobs, because pretty soon I did realize I wasn't super happy in this role. So I did not want to go and apply to the exact same role. And I had heard experiences like yours, my other friends, that it was not an amazing market. And so I started applying to babysitting jobs. I applied to, I even applied to this job to be a personal assistant to Oscar Isaac's wife.
Wow, that is so random.
I was applying to a lot of
where are you finding these jobs?
Listings Project.
Oh, Listings Project.
They have some interesting gigs, like some very random things. And Oscar Isaac and his wife have a film production company. And I was like, you know what? That could be sort of interesting. I didn't get the job. Anyways, and so I was applying to a lot of these type of jobs because I figured it would be good to have some sort of income coming in. And also, I think I was probably inspired by Johnny's episode about career experiments. And I really was trying to take some of the lessons that I've learned in part from doing this podcast of not just having this scarcity mindset of, oh my God, I have to immediately go and find something. And oh my God, this has been this huge disaster. And I'll also say, and this might be something that resonates with you too, is that I was laid off now about 6 or 7 months ago. I did have savings. I don't have kids or dependents. And so I did have somewhat of a cushion, where I think it's a very different situation. I can imagine if I had, you know, multiple kids, a mortgage. And so, yeah, I think it is important just to note that, you know, there's so many different situations people can be in and that we're speaking to this as, you know, our individual situations. And so I did end up getting a babysitting gig, and maybe we'll do another episode where I share my babysitting tales, but that was what I did for, I would say, I think I got the gig maybe 4 weeks after I was laid off and did it for 3 to 4 months. And it was an interesting experience. It was nice to not be tied to my computer. It's just such different work. You know, I went from writing emails and things like that, and then I was literally like wiping a 4-year-old's bottom. So very different coworkers. And I think for me, it was great to have a break from that more corporate, more, I don't know, just what I had been doing. And that was a big lesson I learned from the layoff is I think I cried for 5 minutes and then that was sort of it. And I really, the next day I woke up and I didn't miss the work. I just, I didn't really miss the people. And that was a good thing for me to think on. It's like, I've been doing this job for 2 years and there's nothing I really miss. There's really not people I miss from this job. I don't feel great about that. And I should remember this and I should listen to this. So And that was a good realization to have.
You know, I didn't really agree with your choice to pursue babysitting. And I feel like we had conversations. I don't think I told you this on the onset of it, but I feel like we had conversations, particularly when you were like, I'm going to leave babysitting and pursue other things. I'm curious, like, what motivated you to be like, oh, I'm going to look up babysitting jobs. I'm, you know, like, I look at you, right? And I'm like, you're a working professional with like an amazing career, you know, going from making, you know, a great salary and full benefits. And then like you went to babysitting. And so I'm just kind of curious if you've reflected on that and like, why that?
Ooh, I love when I get put on the hot seat. I'm like sweating a little. I'm like, ooh, it's hot down here. Okay, let me think. I didn't prepare for this in my notes. So, okay. A few things. I think one, you know, it's funny. Here I am saying, I'm like, I didn't want to approach it with a scarcity mindset. I do think in some ways it was a little scarcity mindset driven, as I felt as though babysitting was something I could get immediately, which did happen, right? With babysitting, you know, there's not 4 panel interviews. And I also did want to take it as an opportunity to reset. And I did see it as a way to do that. And I know myself, it was very stressful, the idea of having no money come in. And I mean, babysitting, I was making $25 an hour. I wasn't even working that many hours too. So I think I was making $400 a week. Not a lot, right? But there was something psychological about having that money that felt good to me and important. It gave my days a little bit of structure too. I do think, you know, idle hands make the devil's work. And who knows what I would have done with all that free time, you know? Could have gotten myself into a lot of trouble. And by trouble, I mean, I don't know, like sitting on Instagram. So I think that was part of it. And yeah, giving myself a little bit of space. And there was something, it was different. I also will say I've babysat for a lot of my life earlier. It felt familiar. And I ended up with a family that had 4 girls. There were ups and downs. I mean, babysitting is also a really hard job. And there were times when I'd be at the playground. I babysat 2 twins who would sometimes run in opposite directions on the middle of Bleecker Street in Manhattan. And that's stressful, right? And so I think it's easy to think, oh, this is going to be better. This is going to be different. Every job has stress to some extent. And I was able to leave babysitting at babysitting more. You know, I wasn't up at night like, oh, did I, you know, I don't know, not do some things. Like, no, the kids survived. That was the goal. And, but yeah, does that answer your question?
It does. And, you know, and hearing you kind of share that experience, like on one hand, like I really respect you in that your ability also to like put your ego to the side, honestly. Like, again, like I said, I'm looking at you as this person with this great career who's gotten laid off, who will certainly land on her feet, you know, in time. But you weren't like, you know, you were like, oh, I like no job is beneath me, right? You're like, I'm willing, you know, I want right now for my own mental health and for my survival, like having some income coming in was what I need. And so you were like, I'll do babysitting. But then I think on the other side, right? I think as you sort of, you know, after you did it for a few months, I think it was good for you to see too, like, oh, okay, wait, my time is not more valuable, but like I can be doing something else with my time that's maybe easier or is really kind of like compensating me for like what I'm worth and where I'm at in my career. So yeah, I mean, I respect you regardless that you did it. I just do think, and a lot of people wouldn't, right? I do think a lot of people would be like, oh, well, I'm not going to go back. Like some people would view it as going backwards, right? Where you again were like, this is just an interim thing. Like I'm not going to do this forever. I'm not like starting a career becoming a nanny. But, you know, I do respect that you were willing to like take that step.
Thank you.
No, I think you're welcome. My compliment with a side of judgment.
I think mine was a little, you know, no judgment. But no, I mean, hearing you say that, I think it does bring up a good point because it's a double-edged sword. To your point, I am really humble and there are very few things that I think a positive I think I am really humble and that I don't feel like anything is beneath me. But I think there can be a flip side to that where do I not feel like I'm worthwhile? Do I not feel like I can get a new job? Do I not feel like I can get a job where I'm making what I should be? And it made me think, as you were saying it, so when I was younger, my mom didn't work from when I was like 4 or 5 till when I was in middle school. And my parents got divorced and my mom had to go back to work. And she was doing data entry for, I think she was making $12 to $15 an hour. And this is 20 years ago at this point. So yes, inflation and things like that. But, and I really saw her, you know, there was no ego. It was, she just had to do this. This was not the ideal. It was not enough to keep, you know, two kids afloat in Northern Virginia. But I think I grew up with a little bit of that ethos of you do whatever you need to do to survive. And I both admire that because now my mom today is an accountant and she has something like almost 300 clients. She was named one of the top accountants in the DC area. And I'm so proud of her. Like here she was, you know, doing data entry and it's taken her, again, this is 20 years. And so I really admire that. But, and it's, you know, I've talked to my mom about this career-wise. She was saying to me the other day, she was like, Astrid, I describe you to people as an empowered woman.
Wow. Thanks, Mom.
I know. And I was like, oh, and it's funny because I don't see myself that way. And I think my mom sees me that way though. And maybe it's just each generation, there's a little more empowerment, but I think I still struggle with, oh, I can make X amount. I can get a great job that I'm really happy at. Well, I was laid off. Let me do whatever I need to do. You know, you want me to wear a sandwich board on the sidewalk? Like, okay, great. Tell me when and where. But yeah, great question. That made me think.
I love that, you know, and reflecting on that, like, it's really beautiful that, like, you know, you're able to kind of look back and really admire your mom in that situation and, you know, and what she did got you to where you are and look at her looking up at you, or sorry, looking down. She's looking down at you, really admiring you for where, you know, where you've gone. So that's really special.
So after you were laid off or during the process, do you remember conversations you had with friends, family? What was that like?
You know, I think one of the things that's really interesting sort of during this era of work that we're in, which sounds like a freaking headline, I'm sorry, but is that I'm really grateful that like currently there feels like there's so much less shame and embarrassment around being laid off. Because, you know, everywhere I looked, I knew someone or someone I was connected with had been laid off. So the conversation just felt really different. I mean, it was still bleak because it was like every time you went online, it was like another round of layoffs. And so it was super bleak. But I think that, you know, I didn't feel embarrassed or I didn't feel shame after this. And, you know, my husband was laid off from a role years prior. And, you know, even though it was the same situation as me, like it had nothing to do with his performance. It was really just a reduction in force. They like basically gutted their whole team. You know, I think at that time there was just this culture of like, you really had to conceal and hide the fact that you got laid off, right? It was still seen kind of negatively. And I think, you know, there was a lot of questions of like, how do I craft a narrative? How do I avoid this question of like, why did you leave your last job? And you just couldn't really reveal that in interviews. And so, you know, I think a lot of the conversations I had with him were right, were like recognizing this discrepancy. Like he had this experience that I think was so unfair. And now it's so normalized, right? And so it's just kind of sucked for him, right? Like, why did he have to have a more challenging path when, you know, when it happened to me, it was like, oh, another one bites the dust kind of a vibe. So all that to say, I think, you know, he was really extremely supportive of me. And, you know, and I remember too that like, you know, looking back, right? Like, I love what you said, like your partner at the time had left you that note that was like, you know, this is a push in the direction you're meant to go. Or I don't know if I got it quite right, but I felt like that was the case for him as well. Like when he got laid off, it opened up a totally new path for him. And so I think I had a lot of comfort in that. And he was communicating those messages to me too, that like, this was just like a little bump and I was going to find something totally new. But like more like on the concrete side, honestly, the most helpful conversations were when people were like, this sucks. Like, just acknowledge it, right? Like, it sucks. Mm-hmm. And then people who like helped me with concrete things, you know what I mean? Like, I think when people are going through a tough time and you say, if you need anything, let me know, like, right. Like if they're going through grief, like they've had a loss or they've lost a job, or it's like, no one's gonna really hit you up and be like, hey, help me with this thing. Like if you just do something for someone, it goes a long way. And so there were people in my network that proactively were like, I will intro to you to this person, or sending me job postings, or being like, I know this person at this company. And so I think those were the most helpful, just acknowledging again, and then actually taking that step to be like, you're not just saying, oh, I'm here if you need anything. Like if you want me to review your resume, like actually being like, hey, here's an example of my resume, or here's an intro I have. Those things go a long way. How was your experience? And do you, you know, when you were chatting with like family and friends at that time, like what was their response?
I would say similar to yours. I think you make a really good point about the shame. I did not feel any shame in talking about it, especially with people in New York, because so many people in my friend group had gone through it. So it really felt as though most conversations were sort of a, oh, that sucks, welcome to the club. And it felt as though I was going through this experience that I was sharing with so many other people. So there was comfort in that. I did wait a few days to tell my parents because I wanted to make sure I knew how I felt about it first. And I think that's an important thing to note, that you don't necessarily owe anyone an explanation. Like if you don't want to tell people that you've been laid off, you don't have to. And also to do it in your own time. And I mean, like any hard thing you're going through, to also know who to go to. And if you need a pep talk, maybe, you know, there's a friend who's also gone through a layoff and is in a really dark place. Like, okay, maybe don't go to them. And so I think that is important to take stock of what you need and then seek out support in those correct ways. So yeah, I would say I didn't have any bad conversations at all. One thing that did hurt me a little bit is I had very few people from the company I worked at reach out. And I've been on the other side where I've had colleagues get laid off. And I think it can be awkward because you don't know what to say. You don't want to feel as though you're rubbing it in. One of my biggest pet peeves is when I see LinkedIn posts that are like, today was a rough day at company Y. I was lucky enough to be spared, but so many hardworking colleagues of mine were not. To all of you, I am with you. And I just find
this. Yes. It feels so like self-righteous and performative. Again, that's back to the like, I'm here for you. And it's like, are you, if you were here for me, you would be DMing me right now and sending me an introduction, not posting a like, woe is me LinkedIn post.
Exactly. I just think if anyone listening has made a post like that,
please stop immediately. I'm sorry. Please stop immediately. Or maybe go back and look at your LinkedIn history and delete that post.
And luckily, I don't think I saw any posts like that from any of my former colleagues. But all that to say, I have been in that place where you don't know what to say. And I think it is nice, though. I mean, again, it depends on how close you are with the colleague, but someone you've really never worked with, okay, you know. Also, don't reach out if you don't really know them, because then that can also seem like ambulance chasing a little bit. But I think you can even just send a nice message like, hey, I was sorry to hear the news. I hope you're doing okay. I'll miss working with you. And if you do have concrete things you can offer, if you genuinely did like working with them or you would feel comfortable recommending them, say that, but only say that if you also do feel comfortable following through. And I think if you don't, it's fine to just send something sort of short and to the point. But that silence did hurt my feelings a little bit. And it also made me think, and we'll get into the reflection piece. It did make me reflect though. Again, I didn't feel terribly engaged at this job. Could I have done more to build relationships, to foster relationships? And that is something I've thought about, that it was remote. I wasn't terribly focused on building connections with my colleagues. And if I were to do it again, I would change that a little bit, because I think that did become apparent when I didn't hear much. But again, if you do have a colleague, I think so often we're scared to say something. You brought up grief. I think sometimes when someone goes through a hard time, no matter what it is, we don't reach out because we don't know what to say. And even if you don't know what to say, just a simple, "I was sorry to hear. I'm sorry about what you're going through," is often perfectly sufficient.
Yeah, absolutely. Because they're going to remember, they're not going to remember the words you said, unless you obviously say something like really off the wall, but they're not going to remember that. They're going to just remember like that person thought of me. So I agree. I do think, you know, and if you want to be like next level colleague or friend, then you do the concrete thing, right? And, you know, I think a lot of the times what I would do for people is I would just send them jobs on LinkedIn, right? So it's like, I'm not trying to be like, "Oh, like, how are you feeling?" Like, they're probably feeling shitty. They're probably feeling bad. Like, it sucks to find a new job, but just send, you know, "Oh, okay, I know this person's in this industry. I see something. I'm just going to like send it to them." Mm-hmm. And then that's like a way of signaling I'm thinking about you. So
one thing I've heard from friends who are looking is one thing that can be really difficult is if there's people who are well-meaning, but who are constantly checking in. "How's the job search? How's the job search?" And I think usually it's done with positive intention of, "I'm thinking of you. I want to see how you're doing." But it can be hard to have to continuously share an update. "The job search isn't going well. The job search isn't going well." Or if someone's like, "Oh, how'd that interview with this company go? And have you heard from X company?" Mm-hmm. And if you haven't, and if six people are asking you, it can be hard. So I think, again, you know, you have to, you know, the relationship and you can assess. But one thing that I've appreciate, and not just with jobs, but hard things in general, is when someone just reaches out with a, "How's it going?" And then if I want to talk about whatever the hard thing is, I can, but it also gives me space to just, "Things are going well. I'm having a latte right now," you know? And so I think that is something good to keep in mind, that even things said with positive intention can be a little, if someone's laid off and they're looking for a job, that's all they're thinking about, they might not need a reminder to bring them back to something that's hard.
For sure. And I think your point you made earlier of like, know who the people in your life are that are going to give you the type of support you need. Ideally, you have, you know, and this is why like having a community is so important, right? For all these times in your life that you need support. But like, you know, go to the people that are more empathetic, that are going to be more understanding if that's what you need. And you know, do an assessment, you know, don't go to the friend that's not going to give you the support that you want. You know, maybe they're great in other areas. Keep that in mind. So you kind of talked a little bit about a reflection period, and you kind of spoke to one thing already, but do you think that, yeah, I mean, I'd be curious to understand like what was that reflection period? You said you weren't embarrassed, you didn't have shame, which I think is good, but it does sound like you're like looking back and you're like, "Oh, I would have done these maybe some things differently."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'm excited for this question because I do think we have slightly different takes on it. And so I see it as layoffs happen for all sorts of different reasons. And some truly are unavoidable. You could have been the most amazing top performer and still be laid off. And that definitely happens. But I also think there are scenarios where there might have been actions that, I'll use myself as an example, there might be things that I did that made or put me on the chopping block as opposed to someone else. And especially right after you're laid off, I don't think it's healthy to sit there and self-flagellate and like, "Oh, if only I'd done that, that's not going to get you anywhere productive." But I do think having a reflection period, and yeah, one of the things that did come up for me is, did I do a good job of building relationships and giving myself visibility at the company? And I don't think I did. And having that awareness also doesn't mean that I need to shame myself for it, because it also could be, okay, if I had done that, would I have had to work more hours, or would I have had to do things that were not worth it for me? You know, during this period where I was working at this company, we launched this podcast, and maybe if I had been so focused on building relationships at work and getting visibility, I wouldn't have had the space to do this. And I would so much rather have this than have that job. And so having that realization, again, doesn't mean that, oh, I should have done it differently, but I do think having that reflection is good and will just be helpful to me going forward. And so it's a really fine line between self-awareness and, yeah, beating yourself up. But I do think it's important to have that. And I also, I don't want to see myself as a victim in every circumstance. Like, oh, these things just happened to me and it was totally out of my control. Sometimes it is, right? And in every situation, I don't need to, oh, I must have done something. There's some things that are going to happen to me that just, you know, have nothing to do with me. But there's some things in my life that go wrong that I play a role in. And when I think of how I want to live my life, I want to live it with that kind of awareness.
I appreciate you saying the thing about the victim, because I do think this reminds me of this concept of like black and white thinking, which is something I've really focused on in like my own therapy over the years. But I think it's dangerous to be, you know, to have black and white thinking for anything really, because, you know, you could be like a person who's like, oh, well, yeah, like that company screwed me over, and have this mentality that, you know, it's all their fault. And it just like going to any extremes, or you could be on the other side, right? Of like, oh my God, like I really fucked up. I'm a failure. And so like, it's always like for me, like trying to come back to the middle when you have those extreme thoughts of trying to kind of like see the other side of it, which feels like very much like, well, duh. But it is something that I think you have to actively remind yourself when these situations happen. And like we said at the start of this episode, just it's, what did we say at the start of this episode? I just lost my train of thought. The thought is gone. It's okay.
You said so many interesting things.
Yes, of course. Yeah. So I think, you know, I think we do. My experience was different, certainly, but I can relate to a lot of what you're saying. I do think, you know, it is good to like look back and say like, you know, what did this job offer me, right? And like, what am I taking away? Because every situation, like whether it was like toxic or it was positive, there's something that you can learn from it. So I'm supportive of that. I just worry that like, you know, I back to the balance thing of like not beating yourself up too much and being like, I wish I would have done so many things differently, but it doesn't sound like that's the headspace that you're in. I think for me, it was just a big reset. So I was at a point in my career where I was just climbing and progressing. I mentioned, you know, I had a director level job. I was managing a team of 6 people. And I feel like, you know, when you're on a train and the train is just moving and then like it immediately like just halted and I had to get off and I was like, wait a second, which I think is, you know, these periods are like so helpful for growth, obviously. But I am just the type of person who plans everything. Like I've never not had a job lined up. And so I always think through my plans. I'm very calculated. And so this was obviously new territory for me, but it ended up being exactly what I needed. You know, you already mentioned like, we started this podcast like right after I got laid off. And so I did have like more emotional energy and time and flexibility to do that, which is so cool. And I'm so happy that that was one of the, you know, one of the outcomes of being laid off. I realized how much more confidence I had in myself. And, you know, I was like, actually like way more willing to take risks. Like, you know, once I kind of realized that the job market sucked, I was like, okay, wait, if I've got this one freelance thing, like maybe there are other freelance jobs, like, oh, maybe I could do freelance. That could be cool. So then I got another freelance client. Then I ended up getting a contract job. And then, you know, once it was like 6 months into me having been laid off, I actually had to turn down a job, you know, and that was very hard for me. And I definitely cried and I was scared, but I was in a place where I had, you know, I already had like 3 clients at that point. So it was like, oh, wow, I got a full plate. Like I am working full time, but just in a freelance capacity. And so I think it really helped me just really grow in my confidence. And so less of like looking back and being like, what had I done differently, but more looking forward and saying, oh, wait, I have so many possibilities in front of me.
Mm-hmm. I really like that framing, and at the risk of being, you know, toxically positive, I think that's also a really powerful way of framing your own narrative, and goes back to the victimization point a little bit. It's not, oh, this terrible thing happened to you and okay, you had to figure it out, but this hard thing happened and now you're able to look back and see how much you grew through it and what you learned. And I don't think we have to look back and be like, oh, I'm so glad that happened, but to be empowered enough to make it part of your story and part of your narrative. And a phrase I've been thinking about a lot these days is rejection is divine protection. And it's a little woo-woo, but I do believe that. And I've seen it in just different areas of my life where, you know, like I said, I was at this job that I really wasn't terribly happy at. And I could have just been there for whoever knows how long. And it would have been nice to leave on my own terms to, you know, have had the confidence to take that step on my own. And that's not what happened. But I resonate with you in terms of the, I wasn't going to use the word confidence. I was going to use the word resilience. I think I look back now, and at this point, I was laid off 7 months ago, and similar to you, and you actually really laid the path because you freelanced, and I think it made me realize, oh, that's something I could do. And going back to people who help you out, Mary helped me get my first freelance client, which I'm very appreciative of. And it has been a confidence building exercise for me just in seeing, oh, right, this is possible. And there's a Larry David quote I love. He says, there's two things in life that I love. I love when I'm fired and when someone breaks up with me because it's a clean slate. And as someone who had both those
things, I was going to say, wow, you are living that quote.
And as someone who had both of those things happen within 2 months, and not to glamour, like it's shitty and unbelievably terrible, but when you do come out on the other side, you look back and you're like, oh my God, that was so hard and I got through it and here I am. And there's something really lovely about that. And I think we're also able to have this conversation. You know, this is at least 6 months away for me, longer for you. And so I think it's important to say that we would not have been able to have this conversation till pretty recently, I would say. And I think it is just like anything. It's a process where you're going to feel up and down at different times. But to anyone out there who's going through a layoff, just sending you a big hug. You're going to get through it. You're going to find something probably better, and maybe not right away. I don't think it's necessarily this upward linear path, but yeah, it can be. I don't want to say I'm excited for people, because again, I think depending on the situation, it can be very scary. And so I don't want to take away from that, but it also really can be just an opportunity for growth. So
yeah, as you were talking, it also made me think of this great visual that I saw recently, which was like two puzzles, and like one puzzle was like perfectly put together, right? All the pieces fit exactly. And it was like sort of this concept of like a fixed mindset, or like there's one way to do something. And then the other image was like a puzzle of like, you know, not all the pieces fit together. And so I do think like when you have a life moment, like getting laid off or like losing employment, it's like everything falls apart. And it's like, how do you want to choose to put it back together? And like, you can choose to put it back together however you want. Wow, you're such an empowered woman.
Mom, I hope you're proud. There's also a really beautiful sentiment. I'm not going to remember the word correctly, but it's this Japanese pottery where they take a vase and then the vase breaks and they glue it back together with gold. And I think it's a similar metaphor. And the idea is that it's even more beautiful because it's broken, and that you get to choose how you're going to glue it back together.
I love that. Yeah.
If you do find yourself in a situation where your company is going through layoffs or your intuition's tingling, there are a few things that I wish I had done in hindsight that I want to share quickly. So since I was a little bit blindsided, I think all my health insurance information was connected to my work email. And so after I was laid off and lost access to that, it was just a pain to go through and get all that information. And maybe everyone else is more organized than I am and has thought of that. But I realized, I was like, oh, I actually don't know the login portal. And of course, all of this is hooked up to my work email. So again, I just wanted to cut ties, but it did. I had to email HR and figure it out. And it was just a pain. So in hindsight, I wished that I'd had that documented somewhere, had it connected to my personal emails. I also, you know, hearing you talk about that you had the freelance gig around the same time, I think one thing this experience has taught me is that, and right now I'm freelancing, I don't have a full-time job, but I had always thought, oh, if I have a full-time job, I couldn't also freelance. And I think you can make it work. And so I'm just more open to that. And if I were to do it again, it is a crazy job market that we're in. And so I would definitely try to have something else as a side hustle, or, you know, a freelance gig going on. And then what else? Oh, also, again, when you lose access to your work email and all of that, any examples of work that you want to have to add to your portfolio, or even just, you know, it's important to have metrics for your resume. And so I would make sure, if you have that spidey sense, that you make sure you document anything like that that you need to. So yeah, just a few tips from someone who's been through it. May you not need this advice, but better to be prepared than to realize. And you're already going through an emotional process. And so it really sucks to then just have to also go through this annoying admin stuff if you don't need to.
Yeah, all very, very good advice. I would just add maybe on the kind of the, I would say on the less concrete things, I think your connections are everything. So don't be afraid to ask for help. And I think like if you don't have people in your network, like find a community within your field. Like I actually did also join a Slack community for other community professionals right after. And it's been extremely helpful for getting like job opportunities or just like feedback or tips. I mean, I think that because of the climate right now with like work, it's just everyone is really willing to make intros or then help you out. So if you don't have a community, find one. And then I think also just like take a beat, like LinkedIn will be there tomorrow. It will be there.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately. I really wish LinkedIn would go away.
I think that's also a good point too, that if you are applying to jobs, you really likely, like, I don't think you can spend 8 hours a day applying to jobs. So yes, apply to jobs, do that. You need to be networking and things like that. But I think to also give yourself a break and not to feel as though, okay, well, this is my new job. And from 9 to 5, this is what I'm going to do. You know, set aside some time, keep it a focus, but yeah, don't, you know, force yourself to be so militant about it.
Yeah. I feel like I've heard people say like you in life, like you can never have both time and money. And so it's as hard as it is because you're stressed about money to like take the time for yourself, but really like try to take the, go to the workout class or do the thing for yourself during the day, because once you get that job, like you're not going to have that time back. And so it is, you know, again, this is all, you know, if you're on month 6 of trying to get a job, you know, you're like, okay, I'm sick of the time now and I'm really ready to just make money again, which is completely understandable. But when you're in those early days, try to take that time for yourself.
Mm-hmm. As always, thanks for being here. Thanks for listening. And we would love to hear from you if you have layoff experiences you'd like to share, anything we said that helped or resonated, or if you disagree. You know, we love a hot take. So definitely check us out on Instagram at @dumpsterpod. And thank you for being here.
I'm Mary.
I'm Astrid.
And this was a Meet Me by the Dumpster.